Hello, Paul. Yeah, I'm sorry, Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we were saying, yeah, I'm for about 10 years now, I've been, I guess, almost the only conservative columnist in New Jersey, which is a very funny position to be in because it's such a liberal blue state, and I have a lot of fun trying to defend conservative values of small government, home rule, and those sorts of things against the depredations of people like Jim McGreevy and John Corzine.
Yeah, I had noticed that. I you know, this is amazing, given the fact that McGreevy was just so awful, that the state hasn't really turned around, haven't been able to produce Republican leadership here of any consequence.
Well, you know, the thing that drives me crazy is they are as bad as McGreevy was. Christy Whitman spent more money, borrowed more money, created more liberal programs than Jim McGreevy. For example, universal preschool in the cities was one of her programs, paid for 100% by us suburban taxpayers. She had a $6 billion bond issue to build schools in the inner cities, again, paid for 100% by us suburban taxpayers, and we didn't get to vote on it. When you look at these things, I often find, you know, it's funny, I'll go to these events with these Democrats, and I'll drink a beer with them, and they'll go, how come you're here? How come you get along with us? I go, you know, I get along with you guys great because I know what you want, and you know what you want, which is to take my money. But when I go to the Republican events and I listen to the Republicans talk about how they're going to take my money, I want to strangle them.
Well, the whole Republican, the notion of a Republican not spending has been thrown into the garbage over the last, you know, number of years, and particularly in Washington. But I live in North Jersey.
Yeah.
I live up here in Bergen County, and I actually sent a letter to Corzine when he got into office. And basically my concept was this, and I'm getting killed in property taxes up here, but I live in a small town, 3,000 families. We have 8 police officers. We've got fire. I lived in towns that, you know, can share these resources. So I essentially sent him a letter which said, look, you don't owe anybody anything. You're a multimillionaire. Take a tough position. Regionalize some of these things. You got to focus on cutting costs. The structure doesn't work in New Jersey. And, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I grew up in Long Island, and we didn't have, Rivervale police departments. We had Nassau County police.
Yeah, although, you're in Rivervale?
Well, I'm adjacent to it, yeah.
What town are you?
I'm in Woodcliff Lake.
You know, usually, I'll tell you, we have a great database on this. And generally, what you find is that your town actually probably isn't anywhere near as expensive as you would think. And generally, the reason your taxes are high is not because of high costs, but because the state fails to return any property tax aid. Now, let me give you an example. In Woodcliff Lake, your average, your tax rate is,
Well, I don't know if it's maybe not necessarily important for this conversation.
Actually, it's pretty high. Your average tax bill tends to,
in terms of the structure, and so do you focus mostly on New Jersey based issues, or you deal with national? I see
both
war on terror, and
yeah, I do both. I mean, I'm always appalled. You know, I'm appalled by the way the Republicans, the national Republicans, have been just so horrible. I mean, they've been, very much like Christy Whitman, just big spending. I mean, you elect these people, expect them to be small government, home rule kind of people.
Yeah.
And they turn out to be huge spenders. I mean, Bush has been just an absolute disappointment. He's just been, awful. I mean, it's just horrible in every
respect.
It's amazing.
It's against all the doctrines of Republican, government.
I know. And, I get these emails from these people who think it was perfectly fine to try and rebuild Iraq. And, you say to these people, the federal government can't rebuild Newark. How can they rebuild Baghdad? I mean, it's nuts. They took on this project that had nothing to do with 911.
Right.
They took it on because they decided it was a nice idea to rebuild Iraq, and they ended up putting the Islamic fundamentalists in charge of Iraq. And, you know, people are so stupid. When I write about this, I'll point out that we put in charge of Iraq the party that suicide truck bombed our Kuwait embassy in 1983. It's the Dawa Party. The other leading party is the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq. These are the kind of people Bush put in charge of Iraq. And I'll write this. I'll say, he put Islamic fundamentalists in charge of Iraq. And I'll get these emails from people. You don't understand. We need to confront Islamic fundamentalism. And you know, it amazes me.
Yeah,
I'll say,
I just said. I agree. The happiest person, one of the happiest people in the world was Osama bin Laden when we went in to take Hussein out.
Oh, it was
no question. He ruled the country. I fully agree.
You know what drives me crazy about this is then you hear Bush and these idiots, Condoleezza Rice and that other moron, Rumsfeld, going on about how the goal of the Muslims is to restore the Islamic caliphate from sea to sea. Well, the Islamic caliphate used to be based in Baghdad until the Mongols destroyed it in 1258. And the number one obstacle to the restoration of the Islamic caliphate was Saddam Hussein. And now they took him out, and now they're talking about the fear of the Islamic caliphate returning, which, you know, you read this stuff, and you just think, and then I get these emails from these like, pseudo-conservatives, mm-hmm. and I'm just, it's...
So are you a conservative, are you more of a nationalist in the sense that you want to focus on this country's issues, but, you know, we aren't dealing with a world terror, and, you know, it's a tough issue.
Well, you don't deal with world terror by putting the terrorists in charge of Iraq.
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah, but Hussein controlled them. But, you know...
No one has done as much for Islamic fundamentalism as George Bush.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Iraq. He put the Dawa Party in charge. Hamas, he put in charge. And everywhere, the idea of free elections anywhere in the Mideast is going to produce an Islamic fundamentalist regime.
Right.
And, you know, I find it amazing that people think he's confronting Islamic fundamentalism. I mean, you saw that picture of him walking hand in hand with that Saudi sheikh. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, people are so stupid. You can tell them you're confronting Islamic fundamentalism while you're putting Islamic fundamentalists into power, and they won't understand, you know, that something is amiss here.
So then, you know, do you offer solutions in your op-ed?
Oh, sure. I mean,
what is the solution here? I mean, you're dealing with a global phenomenon. It's a jihad. There's a billion Muslims. I mean, it's just.
Well, I would have thought the first thing after 9/11, and you know, I was thinking about this the other day because it was the anniversary. I mean, the first thing after 9/11, shut down the borders. I mean,
yeah.
I just thought that was going to happen, and that was the end of illegal immigration. I couldn't conceive of anything else. If you had told me in 9/11 that 5 years from now there would be twice as many people illegally in the country, I would have thought you were crazy. For example, Bob Baer, a CIA, ex-CIA agent I talked to a lot, he was telling me he was in Switzerland once, and he got a parking ticket, and he ignored it. A couple of years later, he goes back to Switzerland, checks into his hotel, and the next day they come to collect the parking ticket. You know, because they know who's in their country.
Right.
And can you imagine that in the United States? I mean, you know, George Bush sent visa renewals to two of the 9/11 hijackers at the flight schools. And that wasn't a mistake. He had put a libertarian in charge of the INS. You know, and I mean, these people who get taken in that George Bush is some sort of a conservative concerned about national security, it just boggles my mind. I mean, how does he get away with sending visa renewals to the hijackers?
Well, what about that issue, which was in that 911 Fahrenheit 911, which of course is a lot of propaganda, but
yeah.
That which was in the issue admitted by the Saudi minister, where they got all the Bin Laden family out without inquiring, without questioning. Was that true?
Well, it was true. Now I'm not sure that was. It wasn't the Bin. It was, I think, a
bunch. It was extended family.
It was the extended family, you're right.
Yeah, it was extended family, you know, of Bin Laden, sure.
Yeah, I thought the bigger issue there was Bob Baer says that the Saudis never let us question the relatives of
Right, exactly.
That was, to me,
the
bigger
issue. And there was an airspace freeze, and they let this one airline get through when the air was closed.
Well, not only that, but for about a year after 9/11, they kept the Visa Express program, which was mentioned in that documentary the other night, which permitted Saudis to come to the U.S. with no visa. They kept that for a year after 9/11. In fact, I was the first one to write about
Well, you know, another thing that's not really talked about, and I have this one of the hosts on our show, Atlas Shrugs. Have you heard of her?
Yeah.
She's amazing. So she does a show on Thursday nights, and if you want to have a riot, she's got a guy. She's just a great. She's terrific. She's bright. She's got Andrew Bostone tomorrow night, and she is terrific. And I was talking to her about this. One of the things they don't talk about is this. You've got this problem in Lebanon, Israel. It's a disaster over there. But it's kind of good that we've got our people there in the middle of this. I mean, what if we weren't in between Iran and Israel right now? You know, we'd have to get our...
We're not between Iran and Israel.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, we're in the region. We've got 100,000 troops in the region.
They're all tied down. They can't do anything. They're just getting shot at. All they can do is get shot at.
But, I mean, they're mobilized.
There's nothing they can do. There's nothing. They're pinned down, and, in fact, they're a liability. If we had moved against Iran could easily foment attacks against our troops in Iraq, and we'd be on the defensive.
Yeah.
Bush has handed Iraq to Iran. All the people who now run Iraq are essentially Iranian allies. I mean, the Dawa Party was founded in Iran. The Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution was founded in Iran. These are Iranian parties that are running Iraq. So when Bush starts talking about the need to confront Iran, the first question you ask is, well, if you want to confront Iran, why did you give them Iraq? I don't think people get this. I mean,
right? No, I agree.
You know, when you get outside, it's pretty easy to read this stuff, but very few people do. I mean, I have the advantage that I get to call like CIA guys and so forth.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was out and spent the summers in Eastern Long Island in Sagaponack area, and there was a Sunday morning in August, and I was waiting online to get coffee. It was just. Bush was having a meeting with Cheney out in Texas, the famous meeting, where they were talking about planning for the Iraq War. And in front of me online was Colin Powell.
Oh, really?
He was in front of me.
Wow.
With Ronald Lauder. Colin Powell was reading the New York Times, looking at the head front. It was about 8:30 in the morning, looking at the cover, Bush in Texas with Cheney and Rice planning war, and he looked at it, and he looked at in me, literally, and Ron, and said, look at this. I mean, he was in the Hamptons, Colin Powell, when this took place. Remarkable.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's sort of saying, why am I not there?
Well, like, he kind of scoffed at it. Look at these guys. They're going off on their own here. They're doing this. So this was a mission. This is what they wanted to do, and it was just fascinating. The article probably mentioned that Powell wasn't there or was. I mean, he was out, you know, of course, after that whole incident. But
it was so crazy because, you know, Saddam Hussein was the worst enemy Islamic fundamentalists ever had. And why, after an attack by Islamic fundamentalists, do you attack their enemy? It seemed like these guys had no idea of the realities there. I mean, to me, you know, we should have simply allied ourselves with him at that point. You know, people forget that after our hostages were taken in 1979, Saddam Hussein invaded Iraq and intended to take Baghdad, at which point he would have freed our hostages and we would have considered him a hero. We would have said, and for the rest of all time, he would have been a hero in the United States for freeing our hostages. We put in, and then we were so happy to have him invade Iran, and now you see Condoleezza Rice going on the talk show saying this evil Saddam Hussein, he invaded his neighbor. Well, we wanted him to invade Iran, and for good reason.
Yeah.
We would imagine if he had conquered the Ayatollahs and eliminated them, we'd be much better off. But
now they're sitting on, you know, how many billions of dollars in excess oil revenues. So it's a mess. It's a mess. But you know. This medium, Blog Talk Radio, I think you would be perfect as a host. Have you thought about it maybe? Like once a week for an hour, you just get on. Can you do that? And would you think about doing that? Very easy. You create your own platform. You link it to – you could link to your blog if you do. And
yeah, I don't have a blog.
You don't have a blog.
My editors don't want me to have a blog.
Why is that?
Probably because – you would it's not that they don't want me. I don't want a blog. I mean, you would spend all your time on the blog,
yeah.
You know, and I have to write a column. and I have to research and I have to go out and so forth. But
You could promote your show on, you could promote your column on a platform like this.
Yeah, we're
the audience could call you. We talked about that a little this morning, but this is different.
Well, we already have circulation of about 400,000, you know, so.
Right.
And
well, that's true.
But, I mean, I like the idea. It's just that, you know, I mean, and I like blogs. In fact, when we were chatting the other day, the problem I see with so many blogs, though, is that people who are really good at something then branch out into things they know nothing about, you know.
Yeah, I understand. You were mentioning that.
For example, that UU at character, he's out in L.A., and, you know, he's a lawyer, and he's a, you know, I guess a radio talk show host. And he just goes off, and he just knows nothing about these things, and he'll go on, and Instapundit that Glenn Reynolds.
Right, Glenn Reynolds.
You know, the guy I'm sure knows something about law, but then he goes off into media criticism, and he has no idea. I mean, as someone who's been criticizing the liberal bias in the media for years, I understand exactly where it is. But when you read the blogs critical of the media, they're almost all wrong. They almost always get it wrong. They don't quite understand where the media go bad. Even, for example, when you look at the Little Green Footballs famous thing with the Rather memo. You know, they say, oh, my God, why did they put that memo out there? Well, you know, they put that memo out there, and you're free to criticize it. I mean, a blogger would have put that memo out there. It looked, at the time they got the memo, you know,
It
looked legit. I mean, now some blogger took it apart, but that's fair game, you know, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't have put it out there. I mean, you put it out there, you put it up for criticism, and people look at it. And, you know, Dan Rather was fired over that, which I thought was ridiculous. I mean, you put it out there, and if it's wrong, it's wrong. But that's not where the media bias lies. The media bias lies in favor of big government. And, you know, the media has been incredibly charitable to Bush on the whole Iraq thing, because if you get up there and you say you believe in democracy, you believe in, you know, big government solutions, our government solving the problems of another country, the media love that. I mean, nobody promoted the Iraq War more than the New York Times. And I see these idiot bloggers, and I get these things all the time, the left-wing anti-war New York Times. And I'm going, what left-wing? Judy Miller was the number one supporter. Brooks and the other columnist were very big behind it. I mean, I don't know where the criticism was. I mean, the New York Times has barely said boo against the Iraq War, and yet you'll read in the blogs that the left-wing New York, you know, it's just these people, for the most part, they're no good at finding the real sources of bias in the media. You know, there's really a lot out there, but the bloggers get, I mean, they continually miss it.
Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying. I agree. I mean, my focus has been with this blog, with this medium, is to, I feel blogs are flawed in the sense that they're all historical, and bloggers spend all their time blogging, so much time blogging. They have a passion for what they do. How, you know, would it be interesting to be able to have your own show where you can actually engage your audience?
Yeah, and that's pretty neat. And I think they're great. You know, they're great on the level of small towns. I mean, you find these small town blogs that start up, which don't get major press. But, you know, all of a sudden these small town issues are being discussed that wouldn't normally be discussed.
Right, and it's a great thing, yeah.
I think in Maplewood, which is right outside of Newark, you see this blog, you know, and people start saying things about they don't like this the mayor did, they don't like that, you know, the council or whatever. And all of a sudden, you know, the mayor and council are just going, oh, my God, somebody's saying something critical of me. And, you know, they change. And it's great, you know, on that level. I mean, when people have expertise, I think it's really, really good. I think you're seeing, that's where you're really seeing a revolution, because when those things come out, then, you know, people want to suppress them. You know, they say, who did this? Who said this? You know, how can they say this? And, of course, sometimes the things people say are libelous and
right.
so forth.
And now, you know? You're syndicated to other publications throughout the country? Or?
Yeah.
Okay, how many publications?
Probably about 30.
30, I see.
Yeah.
And how often do you write?
Three times a week.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. And, you know, I try and mix between local and national. So, as you know, we've got this very lively race here, the Menendez Cane race, which is one of these classic New Jersey contests that I'm sure you're aware of. We're in New Jersey. In most other states, when they pick their candidate, the candidate is generally expected to stay in the race. But in New Jersey, the Democrats just started switching candidates whenever their guy falls behind in the polls. And they did this with Bob Torricelli in 2002. And now Menendez has all these ethical problems. And now there's rumors they're going to be pulling him out. And, you know, that's the kind of thing you see in New Jersey.
Well, it makes good writing for you. You get so much material from all these guys. McGreevy, you know, I saw your piece today, with Corzine, the other day about Corzine and his choices. So if things worked exactly as you would have thought, you may not have much to write about.
That's true. New Jersey, you never lack for material. And you know, as you know, being a suburbanite, they just don't deal with the issues that affect us. You know, like I was saying about your town, I mean, generally, I suspect the reason your town has high property taxes is that you get almost no state aid.
Most likely, because we have huge organized companies. The BMW's here, Mercedes, a big in Woodcliff Lake and Montvale and the surrounding towns, huge companies.
And generally, you'll find that in towns like yours, most of the income tax, you know, when the income tax in New Jersey began, it was supposed to be a substitute for the property tax. And what happened was they took it from us suburbanites and gave it all to the cities. For example, actually, you have fairly high costs. I'm looking, you're in the 85th percentile cost of government per homeowner. But here's something you'll like. State aid per homeowner is $984. State aid per homeowner in Newark is $55,000. So if you look at that, you know, your money, I mean, you guys are paying all this money out and you're getting none of your income tax back. Your income tax is all going to the cities.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. The state tax, it is unbelievable. It's no deductions. The state has a lot of problems.
Well, the biggest problem is that the cities draw all the money, and all the money that was supposed to be spent all over the state instead goes to the corrupt cities, you know, Newark, Jersey City, and we're funding their corruption. And it's no one will do anything about it. I mean, even the Republicans won't, you know. Well, for example, here we go. Municipal cost per homeowner in your town is 1/4 of the cost in Newark. Oh, here's the actual figure. Your town aid per homeowner, state aid per homeowner, $984. Newark, $23,737. Every homeowner in New York gets that much state aid, and their property tax bill, they only pay 5% of the cost of their government, and you probably pay 80% of the cost of your government. You know, so basically. Here it is. State aid pays 7% of your budget, 44% of their budget. So, you know, the whole reason your taxes are high, I mean, it's true that your town is probably so small that it's inefficient, that and probably you could save some by, you know.
Not just my town. I just think there's a lot of inefficiencies in the state.
Well, Bergen's got an awful lot of municipalities.
Yes, right. Far too many.
Bergen has the most in the state, and Bergen does have a lot of tiny ones. But, you know, the real problem is what you have to watch out for there is what they would do with your town is try and merge it with a bigger city, and then your tax rate would go up even further.
Right.
You know, they would never actually give you a tax break.
Yeah, hopefully that won't happen.
And, you know, income transfer, I mean, this idea that it's amazing how deeply ingrained these liberal ideas are. You know, people will say to me, like, when you talk about the fact that Newark schools are costing $25,000 per student, people will say, don't, you know, mostly state aid, and they'll say, don't you want the children of Newark to get a good education? And my answer is always, it's not my problem. You know, do the people of Newark care about, you know, I live in Ocean County, do they care about my kids? You know, the home rule, the idea of home rule is we worry about our own problems locally. And this is, you know, the real Republican bedrock principles, things like home rule, which, you know, we've lost with this whole nutty Bush era. You know, it's been the bedrock Republican small government principles are just.
Well, who's your favorite for the next administration.
Well, you know, I guess the advantage is anybody has to be better. I mean, I guess McCain is the front runner.
Yeah, he is.
I kind of like Rudy Giuliani.
Mm-hmm.
I probably like McCain more because he's a Western, more liberty-oriented, you know, Republican than Rudy. I don't know. Who do you like?
Well, I like Colin Powell. I mean, that was...
Well, I'd love to see him run.
Yeah, it would be terrific.
But he never seems to want to run.
No. No, I don't... Maybe he just feels he's just not ready, when they're just not ready for a black president. I don't know what it is with him. I mean,
oh, he'd win in a landslide because...
In a landslide. He's
any terrific. Republican who got the black vote couldn't lose.
Well, he's just terrific. He's just did such a good job, and you know, I just felt bad for him, you know, towing this line that he had to toe during this whole war escapade, and it's.
Who do you like of the people that are likely to run?
On the Democratic side?
No, on the Republican side.
On the Republican side, you know, I've been really focused mostly on McCain. You know, I've followed him for a number of years. I've always liked him. You know, he went to the Liberty College, you know, with Falwell. He spoke there. He got all kinds of grief.
Yeah.
You know, he's trying to reach out to all the constituents.
Yeah, yeah.
The far right is just, I can't imagine they're going to agree to this move from McCain.
They don't have a candidate.
Right. Then Ralph Reed, I guess, is not going to be that one.
That's right. Ralph Reed got caught in the...
But Bush has his finger on the Supreme Court now for the next... You know what? 20 years.
Yeah, I guess.
It's a very formidable change.
I guess Bush is. I guess there won't be any more Supreme Court vacancies. I think it's interesting because it's funny, but the red state, you know, sort of Yahoo crowd, doesn't really have a candidate. It's kind of odd this late into the process.
You mean a Republican candidate?
Yeah, on the Republican side. Or, of course, on the...
Well,
Democratic.
You know, Schwarzenegger, if he could get his citizenship issue resolved.
Which he can't. You know, the Democrats would never let him run.
You
and
know,
also,
so it's interesting, on the Democratic side, who do you think is going to step up?
Well, I think, you know, so many Republicans are touting Hillary because the Republicans love the idea of running against Hillary.
I think it's Gore.
God, he was so awful.
Well, he just, you know, the Inconvenient Truth and this movie that came out, you know, it's quite interesting. But I read something today that 60% of the country now believes that global warming is an issue that needs to be addressed. You know, that's huge. That's a huge number. That has moved the dial. And it is an issue. Again, it's...
Yeah, I guess the problem is, you know, once you've lost the Bush, you know, you look like such a loser.
Well, after the way Bush has run things, you don't. You know, he could say, you know, do you think it would have been better if you had me? You know, and actually I did get more popular votes, right? He did get more popular votes.
But he could have won so easily. I mean, he just...
Oh,
he just, you know, ran such an awful campaign where you have to say, you know, a guy who ran such an awful campaign, how are you going to do any better this time? Same with Kerry.
Well, that Kerry was all. Well, the wife for Kerry was terrible.
I mean, both of these guys must have been hitting their head the next day. How did I lose to this guy? You know, I guess who else is out there? They need what the Democrats need is to find themselves a good Midwestern, down to earth governor. You know.
Well, they had a guy from Louisiana. Who left the scene, something, maybe he was caught with a woman or something.
Yeah, I think anybody from Louisiana is going to have
something. He happened to be very good. You know, Gore's big mistake, I mean, I happen to think that Clinton did a good job in a number of areas, particularly the economy, with deficits, you know, cutting the deficit and raising taxes when he did it. He took some very difficult decisions, and he did cut a lot of debt, you know, and for good, you know, the markets did boom, of course, and of course he was a disaster for other reasons, you know, with Lindsay, Lewinsky.
Yeah.
But Gore totally ignored him.
Oh, huge
mistake. You know, and Clinton had he was a popular president at the end.
Not only that, putting Lieberman on the ticket was insane.
Yes.
I mean, Lieberman may be a nice guy, but why the Democrats, if they ever put a New Englander on the ticket again, will just be committing suicide. Same thing with Curry. I mean, why in God's name? You've got New England in your back pocket. Why do you nominate a guy from there? I mean, you clearly need to win some red states, and you keep nominating these guys from New England. It's crazy. I mean, you know, Gore should have put Curry from Nebraska on his ticket, and he would be president today, or somebody from Florida. I mean, there were so many options that would have made him president, and he just missed them all. I guess, you know, they talk about this guy. I don't know.
Bear with me one moment. If anyone has a question for Paul, we're extending the show a bit with you tonight. I hope you're okay with time.
Sure.
The call-in number is 347-677-0649. That's 347-677-0649. And we're speaking with Paul Mulshine, the op-ed columnist for the Newark Star-Ledger. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, oh, that guy Vilsack from Iowa, I don't really know much about the guy, except for that he vacations in Jersey in the summer. But he apparently is the kind of guy they're sort of looking for, is some, you know, a moderate Midwestern type that you can trust.
What about Obama?
I think he's a little young to throw in there, you know. And again, you know, the thing with Democrats is you've already got the black vote, you know. Do you want to put, you know... from Colin Powell to run a black guy as a Republican will drive the other guys crazy, because, you know, then you've got this monolithic black vote that almost all goes Democratic. And if Colin Powell ran, I mean, imagine Colin Powell running as a Republican and the cities go Republican. Well, when the cities go Republican, where is a Democrat going to win a race? You know, that's where they win. But if you're running Obama, well, black people are going to vote for him. Well, big deal. Black people vote Democratic anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so you then run into the problem of how are you going to, you know, out in the suburbia and so forth, is this guy going to sell? And he seems like a very impressive character.
He is. Yeah, he seems like that. But politicians, so little credibility. I mean, they get nothing done. I mean, I don't know. Have any law, you're in this business, but have any laws been passed in this administration actually got through Congress in the last 2 years, you know, maybe one or two? I mean, just paralysis.
Well, yeah. I mean, I, as a Republican in New Jersey, and I love the tax cuts because that brings it, ironically, that brings a whole lot of money from the red states to New Jersey, to the blue states. And the funniest thing on this is if you go down the list of red states and blue states, the blue states by far benefit the most from the tax cuts, estate tax, income tax, because it costs a lot of money to live in the blue states. And yet you'll see that the blue state senators vote against the tax cuts and the red state senators vote for them. And it's the nuttiest pattern. It should be the exact opposite. For example, the estate tax, I believe, brings back $30 billion to New Jersey over the next 10 years. It brings $1 billion to Mississippi because the states down there don't, you know, aren't valued very high. The Mississippi senators voted to cut the estate tax, and our senators voted to keep it. It just makes no sense.
That does make no sense.
I mean, why would you vote to keep a tax that is transferring $30 billion from your state to the federal government? You know, I mean, you should be looking at these taxes and say, what tax?
That's interesting. I never heard of that. I never considered that concept. Did you write about that?
It's very interesting. It's an absolute, it's everybody is voting exactly against their interests. It's an amazing phenomenon when you look at this stuff. The only, and this is a little obscure, but the only area where people are voting their interests is the alternative minimum tax, which is a tax that was meant to catch millionaires but is now catching the middle class.
Yes, I know it.
And
I'm
we need to reform it.
I'm an accountant by training.
Oh, do you pay it?
No, I'm not. I try to avoid it as best I can, but it's getting harder to avoid it when you've got, you know, when you have state tax, state income tax rates that are so high in Jersey.
And property tax
rates. And property taxes, you know, it's very hard to avoid it.
And if you have a big family and...
Yeah, if you have a lot of capital gain, yeah, it's a problem.
You reach a certain point where all those deductions are no longer doing you any good.
Yeah.
And and the red states... sort of, you can't blame them, say, well, we don't have high property taxes, we don't, you know, so we're not going to do anything about the...
Yeah, and they have a lot of labor that's, you know, blue-collar labor. They get W-2s. If you earn an ordinary, first of all, it's $150,000 adjusted gross income, I believe, is the level that you need for that to occur. So,
yeah, and the other thing that caused it to kick in was that when Bush cut the regular tax rates, that, you know, made it more likely you'd get stuck with the AMT, you know. And it's really going to be awful for the blue states, but the red states are kind of digging in on it. So that's a tough one for us. That's a really, you know, that's a hard one. But generally, other than that, states are generally voting against their interests. And when I hear of like our senators, you know, Lautenberg and Menendez voting against tax cuts, I just find it, you know, amazing. I mean, the best, interestingly enough, I'm an advocate of a big gas tax. I would like, actually, a big, what I would do is, if I were president, which thank God I'm not, a big tariff on imported oil, because that would be put a lot of money into the Treasury, would cut oil imports. And the interesting thing about it is, if you tax gasoline, that's a tax that hits the red states harder than it hits us, because they drive more. So it's a way to actually make them pay their fair share. You know, I would prefer to see a big chunk of the income tax replaced by a gas tax, because all those, you know, hicks out there in their pickup trucks who are laughing at us would all of a sudden be paying, you know, who aren't paying any income tax, would start paying a share of the tax, which, you know, the more they pay, the better, as far as I'm concerned. And it wouldn't affect us that much, because we have relatively high income and relatively shorter commutes, you know. So
How do the gas taxes? It seems like the gas rates have gone higher. They used to be lower in New Jersey, but now they seem to be a bit higher.
The price or the tax?
I mean, that's compared to other states. I mean, of course, all gas prices have gone
up. Our tax is among the lowest in the country.
It still is?
Extremely low. I think only Georgia is lower. And the funny thing about that was Corzine, I thought it was very cowardly. When he came in, he, instead of, you know, Transportation Trust Fund is broke and they need more money for road repair. Instead of raising the gas tax, he borrowed, this is unbelievable, he put out bonds that will run till, I believe, 2038. So in other words, roads they're building, you know, tomorrow won't be paid off until 2038. With this, you know, fictitious revenue that's supposed to come in. Of course, you know, there might not even be gasoline in 2038, and yet the gas tax from 2038 is going to be used. So, you know, the Republicans should have called them on that. Of course, they didn't, because, you know, people are afraid to.
I think that one of the most costly events also is this school construction process, which I know is a problem.
Yeah, that one was unbelievable.
Unbelievable. You know?
And the problem,
in fact, we did pass a resolution. We raised the money. I think we borrowed $8 million in one school and $15 million in another. It was, you know, 4% bonds. It was remarkable. And I hear the whole thing went bust, the whole fund.
Yeah, they borrowed $8.6
billion. Yeah.
$6 billion was supposed to pay for all the needs of the city construction. $6 billion is a huge amount. I mean, for example, when Clinton was president, he proposed a school construction program for the entire nation that was only $20 billion. So you're talking one-third of that money for, you know, $20 billion for the nation, right? $6 billion for 31 towns in New Jersey. That gives you an idea about how much money it was. It was way more money than they could have possibly spent, and yet they blew through it, and they still haven't built the schools. It's unbelievable.
Well, some of them have. I mean, ours actually have just gotten done.
But you got to match. See, that didn't come out of the $6 billion. Your money, there was another $2.6 billion for a 60-40 match for the suburbs.
I don't know.
Yours came out of that.
I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah, that's the way it is. Suburbans, you got a 60-40 match, a 40% state aid. Mm. The city's got 100% state-funded schools. So the $6 billion went entirely to these city schools.
Well, listen, Paul, we got to wrap it up. I want to thank you for calling me, and this will be archived on Blog Talk Radio.
It was great talking to you.
Yeah, it was very good. And
I think we got into a lot of sort of...
We got a lot of stuff, and very interesting conversation for Jerseyites and, and others. And maybe someday we can convince you to be a host on Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it would be fun.
It's very easy. There's no hassle. You can do it from wherever you are, and you know, I'll set you up with it. You'll just do it. You can come up with every topic.
Yeah.
You do a show for a half hour if you want.
Well, I have to start listening to it. I got to get myself an iPod, and like I
well,
said,
well, no, you don't even need an iPod. You go to blogtalkradio.com. All the shows are there. You can listen to them.
Well, you know, I got to download them so I can listen to them.
No, you can listen to them on our site. You don't even.
But that's
to
cool.
Them.
I mean, if you can, you bring them in the car because you know when you're
right.
You're sitting around home. You got so many things to do. But when you're in your car, I think if you can, you know, hook your iPod up and get a program you really want to hear.
Yeah.
I think that would be that'll be a great thing when everybody gets that because you know, and not just blog radio, but a lot of stuff is available
right.
on the internet where you can download it, and then you're driving along and you know you just plug it in.
It's perfect. So
yeah.
Anyway, once again, thanks for joining me tonight.
Hey, thanks a lot.
I appreciate it, Paul.
Good talking to you.
Do well.
Bye.
That was Paul Molsheim from the Newark Star Ledger, and I know that Adelise, I just heard from her via email. She said she had some trouble, technical difficulties getting in, so we want to check on that, and I definitely will reschedule with you. If you like, you can try to give me a call again at 347-677-0649. It should be fine. And we'll schedule another time to get to set up a show. I wanted to promote your show for tomorrow night. You can catch Adelise, her show is called On the Set, not the On the Set, with Nashia. And she's actually one of the popular shows on Blog Talk Radio. And I, as I said, I checked out her show. I wanted to be a guest, and unfortunately we couldn't work it out tonight. It looks like she couldn't get in, so we have to figure out that. And maybe she's using Skype or something, but sometimes there are problems with the lines. We will reschedule her. She has a show tomorrow night, which I want to discuss, but apparently she's giving away a free contest giveaway. She's giving away a T-shirt to any of her callers, any listeners, I think that it is. So she's got all kinds of guests that come on, celebrity guests and others. So I'm going to reschedule this a show with Adelise. I'm very excited about her joining Blog Talk Radio. I see she has a lot of passion for Blog Talk Radio. I've visited her page on MySpace, which is, I can only say, wild. I'll give you her URL on MySpace. It's myspace.com/Nashia Rose, which is NASIHAROSE, and that's myspace.com/Nashia Rose, and she will be on a guest on my show on Blog Talk Radio in the near future. So with that, I'd like to thank you for joining me tonight. It was enjoyable. I appreciate it, and I appreciate everybody using Blog Talk Radio and learning about Blog Talk Radio and making it the best platform it can be. See you on air. Good night.